I'm Allison Keyes, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Michelle Martin is away. Coming up, we will hear from a Diné Navajo Native American band that rocks out. Blackfire will join us to talk about fighting oppression through music. But first, it might sound a bit like a skit from the old Fox variety show In Living Color, but Sunda Kroonquist's life is nothing short of real.
Black people want you to mind your business. You ever know that? That's the truth. Mind your business. That's not your business. You keep your business. That's your business. Mind your business. You minding my business? You better not be minding my business. Don't mind my business, right? Jewish people tell all their business, all right? All their business. Your business, everything. You can't, and they can't hear. It's unbelievable. It's really hard hanging out with your Jewish friends, you know? You can't whisper like in L.A. You can't be like, oh, man, check it out. There's Halle Berry. Hairy belly? Who has a hairy belly? What did she say? Who has a hairy belly?
Her mother is African-American, and her father is Swedish. She says in New York, people thought she looked Puerto Rican, and she converted to Judaism long before she even met her Jewish husband. The mix of religions, races, and perceptions gives Sunda rich fodder for her comedy act, which insults nearly everyone. And I mean everyone. So, on this Thanksgiving Day, instead of serving the usual turkey and pie, or tofu, we're serving up a plate of humor. It's healthier. And Sunda joins us now from our studios in Culver City, California. Welcome.
Well, glad to be here. Glad to be here and just can't wait to eat that turkey.
Or
if one's not thrown at me.
Speaking of things being thrown at you, wait, I've got to say happy Thanksgiving. So happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, too. Get your sweet potato pies on the table.
Ah, they're straight.
Sweet potato pies and matzo balls. That's what we're going to have in my house.
That sounds fabulous. But I've got to ask you, in your act, I mean, you pretty much mock everyone from the workers at Asian nail shops to African-American women and their hair weaves to clueless white Beverly Hills women who are intrigued by your looks. The first time you walked out on stage, didn't that give you a little pause?
Well, you know, the first time I walked out on stage, I wasn't doing this act. I was dating my husband at the time, so I was doing that dating routine and,
oh, the,
you know,
the clean
the
and safe routine.
Oh, girl, please. I was out there with a miniskirt doing a Tina Turner impression. I don't know. I had lost my mind. And so I think it's everyone's fair game, and it's comedy. You know, it's nothing to hurt someone. Mm-hmm. It's just comedy. And people have to lighten up a little bit. That's all.
I mean, okay, I can see you on stage in some places in Brooklyn, and people would be coming across the table at you. I mean, do you ever get that
whip your head moment
where people are like, what did she say?
They're like, well, it's okay, though. You can do that. You have to know your audience. For example, someone said to me, I don't like your new routine. You know, I do a routine about a black nail salon.
Mm-hmm.
I said that, you know, after going to the Asian nail salons and being talked about in their language, I refuse to go back, and I'm going to black nail salons. And now, I said, ladies and gentlemen, I am going right back to the Asian nail salons.
Because?
They talked about me in English.
You talk a lot about being a mom, and we're going to hear a little of that.
It's really awful when you have kids sometimes. I had 2 kids within 2 years, and there's a term for that. Suicidal.
I don't have kids, but I have friends that do, so I was thinking, wow, that is hilarious. But your daughters are 8 and 9 now, right?
Oh, my God, yes. The baby turned 8, and the other one's 9, and I can't believe I did that.
How do they feel about this being your job?
They love it. As a matter of fact, this morning, Aviva and Tova, said to me, you know, Mama, when you die, and I don't want you to die, she said, when you die, I will keep doing your comedy act. I said, thank you. And my other daughter said, and I will bury you in Disneyland. So it's really difficult dealing with the kids. They're pretty funny themselves, I have to tell you that.
I wonder whether you are trying to teach them anything about with your jokes. I mean, I've read that you've said that you wanted them to be comfortable with all races and ethnicities. You know, and we've already talked about how that is a lot of your act. Are you hoping that they learn something from you?
Here. Oh, they know a lot. They go back to Paterson, New Jersey, dodging bullets, visiting relatives, and they know that the world is not the Beverly Hills bubble that they go to school in. So I insist upon the diversity. They go to Debbie Allen Dance Academy. Mm-hmm. They go to gymnastics where there's all Russians. They know diversity. I insist they know diversity.
I grew up on Chicago's South Side. So there were, shall we say, ethnic things that were said back and forth between people then. Your kids are everything. What do you teach them to say when people say something racial to them?
Oh, my God. They don't know it yet.
They haven't run into that at all.
Not yet. You know what? I was at my cousin's birthday party in Paterson, and they were using the word. And I was like, come on, y'all, like, chill for a minute. You know what I mean? I was like, my kids don't know. They're going to hear it. They're going to hear it because someone's going to say, It's just going to happen. That's it. You know it and I know. You're from Chicago. I'm from Patterson. You know they're going
to
hear it.
Right. So did you have to prep them in any special way?
I don't prep them. They're just very proud to be African-American. And I tell them they don't have to just side with one thing. You're also Jewish. You go to a Jewish day school. But they know what they are. They don't have issues. There will be no imitation of life here.
Before comedy, you had a life. And it involved being a private detective. How on earth did you get from there to here?
Well, my degree is in criminal justice. I have a degree from Seton Hall University, and I worked doing probation and parole review. That was part of the baccalaureate program then. And so then I met Vinnie Parco of Parco PI. I got a TV show. Everybody's Hollywood. This is crazy. Mm-hmm. I can't believe I was on these cases with him. And so we did covert and overt surveillance.
So how'd you get from the sleuthing to the giggling?
You know, it's the craziest thing. I was at a party, and I met Jackie Mason. And I don't know, I was cracking jokes in his ear about people who were just coming up to him saying most random things that weren't true. Oh, I loved you in this, I loved you in that. I said, Jackie, this guy hates you, you could tell. And he's laughing. To make a long story short, you know, we go out to lunch, we talk about, he talks to me seriously about it. And my husband, I was still dating him at the time, he says, hun, if Jackie Mason tells you you're funny, maybe you're funny. I took a workshop in New York, the stand-up comedy experience, went on stage 3 weeks later, first gig, paid.
That's like a miracle.
Yeah, and stand-up comedy, better believe it.
Alrighty. Sunda Kroonquist is a comedian. She is a co-host of James and Sunda, a comedy program on Jewish Life Television, and she joined us from NPR West in Culver City, California. Thanks so much, and happy Thanksgiving.
And you're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Thanksgiving means NFL football, and like that feast, the NFL avoids any semblance of portion control. Today, there are three games spaced out so a fan won't be without football for more than an hour, from noon to midnight. NPR's Mike Pesca is here with a preview. Good morning.
Hi.
The first game matches the New England Patriots with the Detroit Lions. Now, Detroit hasn't had a winning season in 10 years, and the Patriots haven't had a losing season in 10 years. So does this mean the game will be a mismatch?
It might. You never know. Detroit has not held up its end of the bargain in terms of preventing mismatches. But here's why I think this game could be intriguing. New England was supposed to not be so good this year. Why would people say that? They are New England. Their coach is Bill Belichick. Their quarterback is Tom Brady. They're just really a smart football team, and they've been playing better as the season goes along. So they come in as a very good team. Now, Detroit's record is bad. It's 3-7. But there is finally, for the first time in a long time, legitimate hope in Detroit. They've been playing competitive games. This game sold out faster than any Thanksgiving game since 2007. So it's that the people are backing the team, and a main reason for that is the Lions' number one pick, a lineman named Ndamukong Suh. Now, I implore you, if you have any interest in this sort of thing, watch the game and watch that mass taking up room in the middle of the Detroit Lions' defensive line. He's a large but fast man. I would watch the game to see how Ndamukong Suh puts pressure on the New England Patriots' line, harasses their quarterback, causes havoc for the Lions on defense.
The other team that plays every Thanksgiving is the Dallas Cowboys. And like the Lions, they're not doing well. They've only won three games. What does that mean for their matchup with the defending Super Bowl champion Saints?
Again, we would think that this might be a mismatch, but here's a reason why this could be a competitive game. Since the Cowboys fired their coach, Wade Phillips, they've won both their games under interim coach Jason Garrett, and they won in the ways that the Cowboys were supposed to be winning all year, which is scoring 30-some-odd points a game. Somewhat lost this season has been that the New Orleans Saints, although a great story last year, haven't been as good. Last week, however, Drew Brees, their quarterback, had one of his best weeks as a quarterback this year. He threw for four touchdowns. So we could see a very high scoring and very entertaining game, or it could be a blowout.
And now to the third game between the Cincinnati Bengals and the New York Jets. Is that worth staying up to watch?
Well, for me it is, you know, but the Jets are, they have the best record in the AFC. They're tied with the best record in football. They're not as good as their record indicates, but they are as exciting as their record indicates. So even though the Cincinnati Bengals come into this game as a beleaguered and bedraggled team, you know, why not just expect that the Jets are going to let Cincinnati take a late lead and either win in overtime or come back at the end? The Jets have proven to be an exciting story off the field and a team that you just want to watch if you like last-minute excitement in football.
And, Mike, you know, I was wondering, Do teams see playing on Thanksgiving as a perk or as really, you know, a crummy way to spend the day?
No, they hate it, except for the teams like Detroit and Dallas, who constantly host the game, so they feel that they've been able to build it into their schedule. But it's a weird thing. Teams like a full week of preparation, so if you make a team play Thursday after they just played on Sunday, it shortens their schedule. Now, it would seem that every coach would say, well, it shortens the other guy's schedule too, but every coach thinks they're the smartest one out there, so they think that if their schedule was shortened and they have less time to prepare, it'll hurt their team more.
Mike, thank you for being with us on this day, this Thanksgiving.
You're welcome.
NPR's Mike Pesca. Okay, to the wilds now of the Pacific Northwest. That's the backdrop for Benjamin Percy's new book, The Wilding. The story focuses on the relationship between fathers and sons, long a staple of literature. Though it's familiar territory, reviewer Alan Chews says Percy minds it well.
At the core of this powerfully written first novel about a father-son-grandson hunting and fishing expedition into the mountains of central Oregon stands an old theme in American fiction: the test of ordinary folks against the wilderness. Though this wilderness is about to be stripped of trees and smoothed out in preparation for the construction of a fancy subdivision, and the patriarch of the family trio, a hard-drinking contractor named Paul, has been hired to build part of it. Paul and his schoolteacher son Justin and Justin's young son Graham head out into the woods knowing that it's the end of this wilderness as they know it. Though there's a ferocious and deadly menace still lurking in the woods, which will push them all to their limits. At home in Bend, Oregon, in their comfortable little subdivision, Justin's lovely but distant wife, Karen, spends her days and nights unknowingly in another sort of menacing environment as a crazed Iraq war veteran circles closer and closer to his prey. I could have done without this subplot. But Percy writes a clean, clear, muscular sentence. Listen to how he describes father, son, and grandson returning to the camp after killing and dressing their first deer of the hunt. The dried blood makes a gruesome brown lacework of their skin, so that they hardly recognize each other when they return to camp carrying their insulated packs laden with quartered meat. And he delineates his characters with a knife-sharp psychological edge. If he'd only focused on the stark and engrossing story of those three men, old and young, and their venture into the deep woods, this book would have come awfully close to being a perfect first novel.
The book is The Wilding by Benjamin Percy. Our reviewer, Alan Chews, teaches writing at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Mary Louise Kelly. After a fall packed with mega minds and teen wizards, Hollywood is gearing up for awards season. That means a raft of Oscar hopefuls at the multiplex, along with a few more potential blockbusters. We asked Bob Mondello to give us a preview.
28 years ago, the movie Tron imagined a computer hacker, played by Jeff Bridges, getting digitized by a malicious master control program. One minute he's sitting at a desk, the next he's zapped by a laser and trapped in a computer gamey universe. Computers have made a few advances since 1982, so the folks at Disney decided to reboot Tron as Tron Legacy. This time, the hacker's son gets a message.
I was Paige last night. Paige came from your dad's office at the arcade. That number's been disconnected for 20 years.
The son goes to the arcade.
Hey, Dad.
Sits in the same desk, and a light comes on.
This isn't happening.
It isn't happening in the same way, anyway. Special effects have matured a bit in the last 28 years, and so has Jeff Bridges.
I'm not your father, Sam. I'm very, very happy to see you.
Tron Legacy won't be Hollywood's only backward glance this season. The Coen brothers are looking back to a movie from the 1960s, again with Jeff Bridges, this time cast in a role originally played by John Wayne.
They tell me you're a man with true grit.
What's your name, girl?
My name is Maddie Ross.
True Grit co-stars newcomer Hailee Steinfeld as a character determined to see her father's killer hanged. And while the brothers Coen are exploring the fictional past, actor Colin Firth will explore some real history. In The King's Speech, he's playing Britain's King George VI, who ascended the throne at a crucial moment.
War with Germany will come. And we will need a king whom we can all stand behind.
At a crucial disadvantage.
The nation believes that when I speak for them, but I can't speak.
He means that literally.
I have received...
The King's Speech is both a sure Oscar contender and the most intriguing English elocution lesson since Professor Higgins met Eliza Doolittle. Also based on real life is the boxing story The Fighter with Mark Wahlberg and the disgraced lobbyist story Casino Jack about Jack Abramoff, who was convicted of fraud, conspiracy, and tax evasion, and who will be released next week just in time to see himself played on screen by Kevin Spacey. Truth straight from the horse's mouth is what Steven Soderbergh gives us in And Everything Is Going Fine, a portrait of the fast-talking, brilliant monologuist Spalding Gray, who committed suicide in 2004.
I was told that I was manic depressive, was on Klonopin and lithium. I didn't think I could do another monologue. Being a dad is fantastic, very grounding, and it's got me out of myself because, believe me, their needs are bigger than yours.
Everyone too much reality? How about a comedy that marks the return of the Fokker family?
Hey, what's a good word, Grandpa Jack?
This is Jack Burns.
Yeah, I know. I could tell from the caller ID.
Dina and I will be there in approximately 18 seconds.
I am so excited to see those little Fokkers.
The Little Fokkers will be joined at the multiplex by the romantic comedy How Do You Know, in which Reese Witherspoon must choose between ex-boyfriend Paul Rudd and current boyfriend Owen Wilson, and by a comedy that's a definite change of pace for Jim Carrey. In I Love You, Philip Morris, he plays a guy who becomes a con man for a perfectly practical reason.
Actually, no one ever really talks about this, but...
Cash or charge?
Being gay is really expensive.
Imagine a gay Catch Me If You Can, and you've about got the drift. None of this sounds quite right for kids, does it? But Hollywood's got excursions for them, too. A 3D trip to see Jellystone National Park's most famous resident, Yogi Bear. A visit to the Bermuda Triangle with Jack Black in Gulliver's Travels. And a return with some rather surprised royals to Narnia.
Your Majesties!
So if there are no wars to fight,
then why are we here?
You are all about to be tested.
The Voyage of the Dawn Treader is the third chapter of the Narnia Chronicles. None has yet been divided in two for the screen, but give them time. Meanwhile, the folks who made The Triplets of Belleville have discovered fresh enchantment in The Illusionist, about a magician and a girl who thinks his magic is real. Illusions also figure in a pair of showbiz sagas, Black Swan, in which Natalie Portman doesn't want any competition as the prima ballerina in Swan Lake.
What's she doing here? He made me your alternate.
The only person standing in your way is you.
And Country Strong, in which Gwyneth Paltrow has some of the same issues as a singer with a drinking problem.
What's going on? That's my song!
Wasn't right for you. It was too...
I don't know.
Too good, too young. What?
Dramas with less showbiz include The Company Men, in which Ben Affleck and Tommy Lee Jones try to survive a round of corporate downsizing, and Two Romances Gone Sour, starring actor Ryan Gosling. In Blue Valentine, he's in love with Michelle Williams, who's far more ambitious than he is, and in All Good Things, he falls for Kirsten Dunst, unfortunately against the wishes of the real estate dynasty to which he is heir apparent.
You're ignoring a very hard fact of life, David.
What's that?
She's never going to be one of us.
Isn't that great?
Maybe not for her.
If anything happens to me, don't let them get away with it.
All Good Things is based on an unsolved real-life disappearance and is the first fiction film from documentary director Andrew Jarecki. Director Julie Taymor, meanwhile, is flipping back and forth not between fiction and reality, but between stage and screen. She's bringing a musical version of Spider-Man to Broadway, even as she brings Shakespeare's Tempest to the multiplex.
Misery acquaints a man with strange bedfellows.
Taymor's Tempest stars comedian Russell Brand, a lot of stage royalty, and a casting twist for the role of Prospero, the magician who whips up the title storm. This time it's Prospera and she is played by Helen Mirren.
We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep.
Let's round out our little list with The Tourist, a comic thriller starring Johnny Depp as an innocent abroad.
Those two people over there are watching us.
And Angelina Jolie as a gal he meets in Venice.
I think you're right.
Really?
No. Frank! Come with me.
If I grab him.
Whoa, I need help. There are two men trying to break down the door.
What kind of problem do you have with the door, sir?
No. There are two men with guns trying to break in. I gotta go!
Me too. Time's up. I'm Bob Mondello.